This is a replay of the Tuesday night, October 10th, WGN show. We started after hockey, around 10:30. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did. I started the stream a few minutes late tonight, so joining in progress, you didn't miss much. Be gasping for breath.
No, I know. And so the doctors look at it, and the nurses look at it, and nobody can figure it out. But it's doing better. I've been here about since last Thursday, and I'm starting to get more breath and more strength and more balance. I'm doing physical therapy and occupational therapy every day.
Good. Are you able to walk on your own yet?
Yeah, I'm supposed to be using a walker, but I cheat a little bit, like to go to the bathroom and stuff.
Well, sure, yeah. Sure, and they hate that, of course. They've got signs all over your room because, of course, they're afraid to death you're going to fall and you'll sue them. So
yeah,
I'm surprised they don't have the alarms on your bed, where if you get up, it calls half a staff.
I went through that for a week and a half at the hospital.
Ugh, don't you
every,
just love
every
that.
Every time you roll over, just three nurses come running, you know.
Yes, exactly. No, I know about those alarms. Yeah. That's just horrible.
Yeah.
Now, you do have a room to yourself, right?
No, I have a guy in here with me.
Oh, do you really? Ooh, that always worries the heck out of me. Just from the standpoint of hospital-borne infection. I'm not a fan of that. So
I'm not either, but, you know, I mean, they put me in here with him. And it's weird because he's 92 years old.
Yeah.
And I'm 71. But he worked at the steel mill where I grew up. So while I was a kid growing up, he was working in that mill.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We talk. It's just fine.
Oh, yeah. No, it's fine from the social standpoint. I don't have a problem with that. But, you know, the stats are alarming about hospital-borne infection and how semi-private rooms are a big issue compared to private rooms. So get out of there as soon as you can. All right.
Yeah, I am. I'm trying to get my strength back and get out of here. And tomorrow there's 40 staples coming out tomorrow.
Good, good. And so no infection at this point. You're healing nicely. It's just regaining strength?
Yeah, just regaining strength and balance.
Good. You'll do that.
I just didn't want to go home by myself.
It's a smart decision. When you don't have anyone there to help you, absolutely. That was a smart decision. And most people wouldn't have done it. So I applaud you for that.
You know what? I was lucky because the doctors kept saying, oh, no, oh, no. And I found there was a young nurse there that was had my room, and she decided to advocate for me.
Mm-hmm.
And she just went to the wall. She called the doctor. She called everybody that she needed to call and get a hold of and
got me
evaluated, had physical therapy, came in to evaluate me and say, you know, yeah, he needs to go somewhere. He can go somewhere. And I have to give her a lot of credit for that.
Absolutely. And when you get home, hopefully you can follow up with some outpatient therapy to really regain your strength.
Yeah.
Good. Good. So apart from being weak, how are you feeling? You're not nauseous?
No.
Excellent.
No pain in my stomach or anything
good.
Like that. Everything's feeling good. And
that's great.
It's flat because they took all that. I had all that doggone that mesh in there and everything that had ripped open. And they had to take all of that out, too.
That's probably good.
Yeah, because that was part of what was helping to strangulate the intestine. And
they're finding out about that not being the best course of action. So in a way, while you hate to have go through what you went through, it was lucky because you're going to be better from here on out.
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
For sure.
All right, so at this point, what's your ETA for home?
I don't know yet.
Okay.
Maybe a couple weeks.
Oh, really? Oh, they think it'll be that long.
Well, nobody's really said. I'm not going anywhere until I feel like I'm ready to leave.
Yeah. Yeah.
You
well,
know,
good
I mean,
deal.
I pulled the plug. I went through the mess. I mean, I had to get somebody to come and meet. I got someone watching my house and
good.
You know, all the outside stuff. So that's all in place. I'm not going to rush out of here if I'm not ready.
Sounds good to me. Well, as long as they'll keep you, you know, they have their rules. But
I know.
Sounds good to me. And you're sounding fine. You know, I mean, just from the standpoint of your voice, no one would ever know that you went through anything.
Yeah, I'm feeling much better. Much better. So
excellent. All right. Well, I'm sure glad it ended well.
Okay, thanks.
Keep me posted.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Bruce. All right. So we'll keep Bruce in our prayers until he is fully home and on his own and all is well. But yeah, man, I'll tell you what, nothing worse than that night before surgery. So I know when he called us, that just always keeps me on edge. And I was so glad that it came out the way it should. And in the long run, he's better off for it. So we'll get to John in Waukegan. There's room for you too, 888-876-5593. And I will tell you about this suicide by cop coming up. But nobody's really sure exactly what has happened. Oh, we know the guy's dead. But exactly what his intentions were, hard to say. I'll lay it all out and more coming up on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells, Down the Aisle, the wedding song, arguably first hit. I say that because, of course, I Sold My Heart to the Junkmen is credited to Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells, but actually was the Scarlets. It was just a mix-up and label copy, but this one is definitely Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells, one of which is Nona Hendrix, of course, who turned 79 years old yesterday. Happy birthday to Nona. This one was 1963 on the Newtown label, which was a Philadelphia-based deal, but it was distributed by King. All right, so 888-876-5593 takes us to John in Waukegan. Welcome, John.
How are you doing tonight?
All right, how about yourself?
Pretty good. Last night you was speaking about that
cremation in Japan.
Cremation, yeah. I was speaking to some of my friends last week about the very subject, and I was saying that I think in the near future, a lot of the major states, I think countries will. We'll probably turn to cremation, and we had a Dalton Thomas in our group, and he's no, I don't think so. So I said, I'll tell you why I think that they will do this, simply because they've been burying people for thousands of years, and it's been consuming a lot of the land. So, and say 2,000 or 3,000 more years now, you won't have farming land for graveyards. That's my belief.
Well, right. There's one fly in the ointment of your argument here that I'll get to, but as you're absolutely right that we are moving toward cremation, and most major religions, including the Catholic faith, now do not forbid it. The Muslim faith still does, mm-hmm. but most others don't. Now, here's the thing. Did you know that when you're buried, there is, for the most part, no guarantee that that body's going to stay in that grave forever? There are many, many cemeteries that after 99 years, up they come. It's not necessarily perpetual. Cemeteries very often will rent out plots, allows people to leave. What they're really doing is leasing a space for 100 years before the grave is recycled. Now, some states prohibit it, but as far as running out of cemetery space, we're not keeping people in the ground. And I don't think a lot of people realize that. I came across that when I was living in Philadelphia. I was in the Northeast, and I was over there by the river, and I saw all these gravestones, I mean, markers and headstones. And I thought, what is this? And they were older. Mm-hmm. They were actually from the 17 and early 1800s. I said, what is that? I said, well, of course, you know, it's not forever. And that was a real lesson to me, because I did not realize that a cemetery, depending upon their own rules and regulations and the regulations of the state, don't have to keep you in there.
Oh, so in other words, you saying that it's almost like a state, you have to pay rental every year. So in other words,
yeah, almost.
So in other words,
almost.
That's, so you have to. In other words, the funeral home will say, well, we'll keep them in there for 50 years and just dump them without anyone knowing, right?
Yeah, well, you know, again, it depends on the laws of the state and also the regulations of the actual cemetery. You know, it's usually in the very fine print. But, you know, the bottom line is the idea that they're going to be there forever. No. In some cases, it is, like you say, almost a rental fee, like after 70 to 100 years, if no descendants are paying for an extension, the remains are dug up, the headstones are removed. So it depends on, again, the state and the cemetery in which you're buried. But the idea that it's just everywhere, people are going to be there forever, not true.
Yeah, well, that's...
That's kind of scary, isn't it?
it's kind of scary. People do things undercover for beneficial reasons.
Oh, well,
I guess that's what the situation is. But that's what I'm not, just like we're a different topic here. A gas where they have digging for oil and stuff like that.
Uh-huh. Exploration.
I think that a lot of the oil companies are against the cars with the battery electric cars, that should be something that you have readily for, because you know the earth is just so long and so deep, and they've been taking out oil out of it for a couple of hundred years now. Eventually they're gonna drain the the oil supply.
Well, yeah.
So
now,
once they drain the oil,
When you talk about electric cars, of course, it requires electricity. And here's the deal. Electricity usually uses fossil fuels to be manufactured. In other words, the plants that give you the electricity are using fossil fuels to, in fact, be able to give you the electricity. You know, electricity is not coming out of thin air.
Yeah. But eventually, it's just like, they used to have the hand crank with the cars.
Yes.
You know? And then they got the electric starter. Okay. Now you got the deal where you can start the car from out of the car. So everything they're gonna find a way.
Oh, of course they will.
How to tweak it where they'll jump from that one program to a better one.
Of course. No, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You're 100% right about that. And the real problem with electric cars now is the idea of storage, of battery storage. In other words, you can only go a few hundred miles before you have to recharge. But the day is going to come when you will perpetually recharge it. And there's a number of things in terms of inventions that have to happen first. But yes, I agree. We'll get there. Not in my lifetime, but hopefully in yours.
Yeah, well, it's a cleaner, it's better.
Oh, they'll get there, but as soon as they solve the grand unified theory, we're in clover. You've ended the hour. Call me again soon.
Okay.
Thanks. Appreciate it. All right. So another 2 hours to go. Hopefully, you'll join me on WGN Radio.
Me all the time and tell me that you love me and forever you'll be mine. I know love's a hurting game. I know.
I'm Raleigh James. That's Ivory Joe Hunter. Love's a Hurtin' Game. One of his latter hits, and it was a hit, 1957 on Atlantic. Ivory Joe would have turned 109 years old today. Just amazing. Yes, since I so many of great hits by Ivory Joe Hunter, and rarely is he mentioned anymore. So Love's a Hurtin' Game was probably one of his lesser known, but not a bad hit at all. Certainly high on the R&B charts. All right, so 888-876-5593. James is in Oregon. How's it going, James?
Hey, just fine. It's an interesting topic tonight. This all about the cemeteries and stuff like that. Some years ago, there was a movie that was going to solve all this problem about lack of food sources and cemetery spaces.
Soylent Green.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Fortunately, nobody took that seriously, I hope. It's perfect around Halloween, but other than that, no. But yeah, I think a lot of people don't realize, depending upon the state and depending upon the regulations of the cemetery, it's not forever by a long shot.
Yeah. I like to, even as a kid, I used to like to go walk through cemeteries. I just looking at the old headstones and stuff like that.
Sure.
And, seen that, and even in Indiana, off of there's a right in the corner of where the two highways intersects. There's an old cemetery from back in the 1800s. Just I think it was like the community cemetery at one time. It's all fenced in, you know. But it's interesting about that. Yeah, but yeah, this I think maybe what's going to happen next is maybe. Elon Musk and SpaceX, they'll just start shooting bodies up into space.
Oh, that's all we need. Yeah, I don't know the fixation with wanting to keep the body anyway. Cremation makes the most sense to me. But obviously in some countries like Japan, it's now mandated. So, hard to say.
But the thing is you still have to do something with what's left over.
Well,
not
really. The cremains can be dust in the wind, literally.
But I know, like, where my one aunt and uncle, my aunt passed away, and she was cremated, and he's planning to be cremated when he goes. But They got a burial space, you know.
You can. Some people do that. Absolutely. If they want a space where future generations can come and pay respects, you absolutely can bury the urn if you choose to. Or there are so many different things. Of course, Neptune Society bury them at sea, things like that.
Yeah.
There was one comic book artist who had his remains put into the ink for the comics that were coming after him. And I thought that was kind of neat. So there's a number of things you can do with that. So
wasn't there at one time too, I don't know if they're still doing it or not, but they were making like jewelry and stuff.
Oh, they absolutely. That's more than ever if you want to do that. Use for cremains, I'm sure the list is fairly endless. There's a certain amount of regulations, and again, in each place, but it differs. Illinois is interesting because, of course, if the grave is less than 100 years old, that's one set of regulations. But let's say you find a grave on your property, you bought some land, and somebody was buried in it, and it's determined that the body is over 100 years old, or what's left of the body, then the historical preservation people control that. So you've got different entities doing different things with that.
Yeah, on my some of my ancestors on my mother's side, her father's family owned a farm in West Virginia, and back on there, there's a family burial plot there, and it's still there, but somebody owns the farm.
Sure.
But they allow you to, when they're not planting and stuff like that, they allow you to go back in there to visit the graves and stuff like that. But
depending upon the location, at some point, if somebody buys that land and wants to in fact do away with the grave, they can. In other places, they can't. So it's kind of a nightmare if you bought a place, didn't know it, and later discovered, bodies. It may or may not be an issue. But tattoos are popular now. You could turn your cremains into tattoo ink. You name it. The list is probably endless. But I would say the discussion is really more of an emotional/spiritual/religious discussion because people bring a lot of meaning to it, which is far as I'm concerned. I'm just using this body while I'm here. I don't have any plans for it to be preserved.
It's we have, when my father died in 1950, my mother bought four lots, one for him and one for her and one for my brother and me. And, I don't know what her plans were, but so it's just my dad there now. We're in Ohio, but they still got his land there. And you can't sell it. You can, but you can't, you know.
Especially if somebody's already in one of the plots. You know, somebody else might not want to buy the adjoining plots, right? It's like, I didn't know that guy. I don't know. Yeah, exactly.
Give eviction notice. Yeah, but, you just wonder about it, though. You don't, I guess, don't stop and think about it, you know. Where are you going to put all these people, you know?
Well, that's why I say it's kind of a myth because most of the cemeteries don't last that long, you know. I mean, a couple hundred years might seem like a long time, but in the scheme of things, not really.
Well, I went to, I had some of my ancestors I was following up on. They were in Vive, Indiana, which is right in the corner of Indiana, Ohio, and Kentucky in there. And they passed away in the early 1800s, and I went back and I found a cemetery for that town, but they that section, for some reason, they moved all those bodies out to a county cemetery back. I don't know why they did that. I don't know for whatever reason, because it's still a cemetery in there, but that one section they moved out to another. Yeah,
interesting. Who knows?
And then I know sometimes, like you say, when people buy property, if they want to use that cemetery land for something like that, then they get permissions or whatever they have to go through, and then they move the bodies to another cemetery or another piece of land somewhere, you know.
Yeah, well, you hope so. I still wonder about all those gravestones floating in the river by Philadelphia. I have no idea what happened to the bodies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, good deal.
Yeah.
All right, James.
We use that lamp.
Yes, okay, absolutely. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
Okay. All right.
That could be the big surprise, you know, especially if you bought property you're expecting to develop and it's whoops. Yeah. You can put the cremains in fireworks. That's been done quite a bit. There's a number of possibilities as far as that goes. But, you know, again, I think it depends on your spiritual orientation when you're here. You know, what do you believe with regard to the, you know, the immortal purpose of the body, if any? And so that kind of dictates things as well. I wouldn't want to be in charge of this myself. That'd be a bureaucracy type job that I would not want. All right, so we'll get to Marianne and Leah and John and Covington and you too coming up on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Ronnie James. Well, the foundations and the memory you wish you never had. My Little Chickadee, 1966 on Uni. Yes, Pat Burke from the tenor sax flute section of the foundations. You know, baby, now that I found you, I can't let you go. Yeah, them. He turned 86 yesterday. Time is marching on. All right, so 888-876-5593-8888. Ronnie, Marianne is in Chicago. How's it going, Marianne?
Okay, how's it going with you?
Can't complain.
I was just sitting outside a minute ago, and I heard a coyote howling his brains out.
Oh, they will, yes.
Okay. Well, I'm surrounded by three cemeteries and a wooded walking path.
Ah. Then maybe it wasn't a coyote.
No, it was.
Well, who knows?
Don't say that, because I already had that conversation with my son.
Uh-huh.
I said, when I was on my walker, I go, if we have a zombie apocalypse, what happens to me?
Well,
he said, Rub dirt on yourself and get real stinky, and they'll think you're one of them.
Oh, geez. There you go.
But I was calling because I heard you talking about the cemeteries and whatnot. And there's one over here by me. I know you're familiar with Chicago.
Yeah.
Foster and Pulaski, the Bohemian National Cemetery.
Okay.
I think it's the oldest one in Chicago. It has the victims from that ferry that went down in the Chicago River in the 1800s.
Yes.
And back then they put the pictures of them on the tombstones.
Yeah, and there used to be a lot of information on tombstones. So if you'd walk an old cemetery, you could get information about who was in those graves. So, yes.
Yeah, but the creepiest thing is when it's, you know, little children and babies and they got their picture.
Well, yeah.
But they have walking tours there. Bicycle tours, and they have a little mini Wrigley Field where it looks like the wall at Wrigley Field, and you can purchase a drawer to put ashes in.
Okay.
And I took my mother there because she's a big Cub fan, and this man explained that they brought the ivy from the wall, and it's growing up the monument.
Mm-hmm.
They brought dirt from the warning track and put it around the monument. There's the old-fashioned seats that they used to pay the kids for a ticket to come back, flip up all the seats in your area and pick up the cups.
Mm-hmm.
Then they had the new ones that flip up when you stand up. They had home plate. They had a bench from the dugout. And he told me in the summertime, the old timers come out with their radios and listen to the game and like they're at Wrigley Field. So I said, you know, you're missing a concession stand.
Oh, jeez.
And he said to me, yeah, we could sell Tombstone pizza.
Oh,
I said, why are you raking leaves here? Why aren't you working at a comedy club somewhere?
Oh, jeez. Well, yeah, and it's interesting because they have the Friends of the Bohemian Cemetery and all that. So, you know, making sure that things are kept up. And very often with old cemeteries, and it's all actually not that old. It's about 150 years old. I think it was the 1870s when that cemetery was first put together. Very often it's groups like that, like Friends, who are the ones who keep it up.
Yeah. And they've been filming over here, too, the past couple of years with, I don't know, Chicago PD, Chicago Med, one of those Chicago-based shows.
Uh-huh.
And, they're out, you know, they were out there with all their trucks, and I'm like, they're filming in a cemetery. Maybe I could be like a body double, just lay in the grass.
Oh, gee, oh God, yeah, right.
I can't run around or walk, I'm just laying in the grass.
No, it's actually a beautiful cemetery. It's got, you know, museums and stuff like that on the ground and all that. And I know they will allow things like you're talking about, but the deal with that is that they are, you know, real strict about, they don't want you to photograph personal information, and I don't blame them. Because
the end of it, that they do this at is pretty much vacant.
Yeah, and that's fine. It's fine.
They
just don't want all the grave information suddenly showing up in a horror movie or something of that nature. Yeah, it's
right.
It's a very neat place. You're absolutely right.
I think they've even added an area for your pet.
Oh, God. Well, don't start
because
me on that. Don't start me on that. I've told that story before. All right. Well, good deal. I appreciate the call, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Marianne.
Okay, bye.
All right. So we'll check out the news at large and then get back to dead people. Or your calls, even better, on WGN Radio. James. Of course, that's Leroy Anderson, and he composed The Typewriter 73 years ago yesterday, put out as a single in 1953 on Decca, did originally for the Boston Pops, and he composed a lot of light pieces for Pops type orchestra, and occasionally would do so with a lot of mirth, hence the Typewriter. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888-Raleigh, and Leah is in Marcus Hook. How's it going, Leah?
Pretty good. How's it going with you?
Can't complain.
When I was young, our junior high school was across the street from a church with one of those really old cemeteries, and we used to just go over there to get high at lunch.
Oh, great. Well, I'm sure it didn't bother any of the inhabitants. Not a one of them.
I'm sure it didn't, but yeah. So most of my experience with graveyards is partying when I was young.
Mm-hmm.
But I found, you mentioned it earlier momentarily, I found out that you can turn yourself into fireworks, and I want to do that now.
Yeah, Absolutely.
I want to do that.
Absolutely, you can.
It's awesome.
Yeah. No, whatever you want to have done for the most part is perfectly okay. So, yeah, there are companies you could contract with that when your ashes, you know, become available and not before, you could, in fact, go up and smoke, so to speak. Yeah.
Yeah, they do it a lot more in England than they do it here. But you can find people to do it here, and you can either do it yourself, like have someone do it yourself, like a small display, or they can come to you and do like a big display.
Well, right, but you remember there are laws about fireworks display to begin with, so you know, probably best to go to one of these companies. They have things like Heavenly Stars Fireworks and others like that, going out with a bang. You know, there's all sorts of companies that that offer this service.
Yeah, no, I mean, like the company will either send you like the stuff to do it yourself, or they come to you where they come and do like the big display.
Yeah, well, as I say, it still depends on what you can do yourself legally. You know, some places you cannot set off any fireworks on your own.
Well, that's true.
So it depends how close you are to major fire zones also. So, it's been actually cremation fireworks have been going on for a long enough time that there are competing businesses. And I think, that, you know, it isn't expensive, less than a funeral for the most part.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I totally want to get it done. I just think it's a great idea with, like, music, you know, really good music playing in the background.
Yeah, well, you know, if you're wanting a display just for you, well, that's going to set you back some more money, obviously. But you certainly can do that. Now, these companies come and go, interestingly, and usually it's things like insurance that knocks them out, or noise ordinances, or you know, something of that stuff. But it's no longer what we'd say arcane or truly unusual. It happens.
I know. I've never been to a funeral that somebody did that, but I just think it would be awesome.
Yeah.
I don't want everyone standing around crying or anything. Not that they would, but...
Yeah, well, I'm not giving anybody the opportunity. No service for me. So thank you very much.
I just thought I'd bring that up because I just think it's awesome.
Well, you know, it's either that or you can also just get that final screw you and pick one of these no smoking places where they're just emphatic that there be no ashes and have yours spread all over it.
So, yeah. That would be good, too.
Yeah. On a TVA lake or something. Yeah, there's a lot of choices.
Well, I still have my grandparents, both my grandparents' ashes and my mom's ashes, because they all want to be spread at this place in Beloit. And I can't get there.
Yeah, not now. You will eventually.
I don't know when I'll be able to get there, you know? Hopefully I can get back there someday and do it, but I don't know.
Well, if not, let me ask you this. Assuming you can't, and there are the ashes on the mantle or whatever, who gets them when you go?
They're in a box. Well, yeah. I'm thinking my cousin travels a lot, my cousin on that side, and he goes through Beloit a lot more than I do, so I'm thinking of just giving them to him and letting him do it.
Yeah. All right. Well,
so, you know.
At least they wouldn't be part of, part of your remains, literally, where somebody said, now what do I do with it?
Because there's nobody on that side after me. He's older than me, so.
All right, well, time is a-wasting.
Yeah, definitely.
All right.
Tempest fugit, you know?
Yes, exactly.
So, all right. Well, thanks, Raleigh.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
All right. Bye.
Yeah. I remember when I was young, a friend of my mother's society couple in Manhattan, of all things, they were on their way to, I don't know what it would have been, like a Yankees game or something, box seats, you know, that kind of stuff. And what comes as a delivery but somebody's ashes? And I remember the story so well. I said, what'd they do? Well, Manny took them to the game. So I have no idea if Manny left them at the game, but they certainly made it to the game anyway. I have no idea if there were football fans or baseball fans involved in that. But 888-876-5593. That would be 8888 Raleigh. And that's going to take us to John in Covington. How's it going, John?
Hey, Raleigh. I just wanted to say... Well, it's the done deal, okay? All they're doing is they're going to wait on me, but it's a done deal. The University of Cincinnati gets my body when I'm done, and mm-hmm. I checked it out with my uncle that's a priest and my parish priest, and is it okay to do that? And they mm-hmm. said, certainly, as long as your remains, your cremated remains, because I do want to be cremated afterwards, are in a Catholic cemetery, and that's no problem. I did want to have my ashes spread across the finish line at Churchill Downs, but
good.
Since the church doesn't like that, I'm going by what the church wants, you know?
Well, let me ask you, when you donate a whole body, obviously there's some spare parts. What do they do with the parts they're not going to use until you get together and get the full cremation?
Well, they just keep them together, you know?
They do. All right.
Yeah. And believe me, it's not an issue with me. I'm financially fine, but they pay for the cremation. Cincinnati does. And that way too, you know, and hopefully it's not for a long time because I'll tell you, I know I said I would never, ever bring this up, but my oncologist is very, very encouraged because I'm responding to the immune therapy. It's called Keytruda. I'm doing really well on that, so hopefully it's not for a while.
Yeah.
And then that way, and I have a treatment done every 6 weeks, and it only takes a half an hour. Yeah. But and then see that way too, my family can honestly say I went to medical school.
Right. Yes, that's absolutely right. That's 100% right. Yes, I love it.
Now I did want to ask you. I've been thinking about. I have this. I have nothing to play it on, but I don't mean to go overly Catholic on anybody, but you don't have to be Catholic to like this song. It's Franz Schubert's Ave Maria.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a 1962 RCA Victor with the dog on it. You know, mm-hmm. oh, what's his name?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Nipper. Name is Nipper.
Nipper, yes. Nipper, yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I want to have that, in a frame, like, you know, I want to have that framed. I got nothing to play it on, and I do love it, and it's by Perry Como.
Okay.
Now, okay, I've heard Perry Como sing it. I've heard Frank Sinatra sing it. Several people. And Bing Crosby. Bing Crosby is a baritone. He has no business singing. Anyway, Andy Williams. To me, it's between Perry Como and Andy Williams. And both versions are just, oh, my God, they're so beautiful. And how do I say this? I don't want to sound really morbid or anything, and it's going to come off this way, but I remember when RFK was killed, and Andy Williams is a very good friend of the Kennedy family, and he sang in St. Patrick's Cathedral. He sang the Ave Maria and the closing theme, and it's really not a Catholic thing. It's the Battle Hymn of the Republic. And I remember watching that. I still can't get it out of my mind. And Andy Williams, tears. He's got sunglasses on. And through the sunglasses fell the tears still, you know. And it was quite moving, that's for sure.
Well, of course, it was written in 1825, so there's no shortage of versions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, he sang it with a choir, the first half of the song is Andy Williams a cappella.
Mm.
Between the two, it's a toss-up. It's going to be, I love Perry Como's version, and I love Andy Williams' version, but I got the 62 record of Perry Como, and I'm going to have it framed.
Sure, why not? Why not?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
I appreciate your time, Raleigh.
Always.
Thanks a lot.
Good to talk to you. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
All right, I'll have to see whether Secondhand Song has a list of how many versions of Ave Maria, but I assume we're talking in the thousands, and then you got like the piano thing that Franz Liszt did and all those other things. So, yeah, and part of Our Lady of the Lake or whatever it was. Yeah, my knowledge of Ave Maria is limited, but Schubert for sure. 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh on WGN Radio. Anderson, a hit on Decca, actually came out a couple of years before The Typewriter, 1951 on Decca. Don't know if it was written before it, but certainly was released, and those were his two whimsical pops hits. So there you had it. But yeah, 73 years ago yesterday, he wrote The Typewriter. Well, I can only wonder what inspired that. 888-876-5593. Dorothy is in Oak Brook. What's up, Dorothy?
Well, I just wanted to give you some information. My husband managed cemeteries.
Oh.
And for the one thing, that man who said that his relatives had been moved out of the cemetery and put into a county cemetery,
mm-hmm.
Well, I would suspicion that now you have a portion of the grave cost must go to perpetual care.
Yes.
And so I imagine that his aunts were buried so long ago that that cemetery may not have had perpetual care. So then when, you know,
right.
Then they moved the graves into the county. And then I think somebody was talking about, you know, that graves are sometimes moved out of areas and then the ground is used for something else.
Yeah.
Well, basically, your city or county is able to do that by eminent domain if they're widening a road.
Right, right, absolutely.
But then they have to, of course, move the graves to some other area.
Yeah.
And that was done at O'Hare. There was actually two cemeteries, and because they were extending runway.
Hang on a minute. Don't go away. Stay where you are, Dorothy. Got more questions, I'm sure. And yeah, the more the merrier, and we'll have room for you too. We got another hour of this coming up on WGN Radio.
Day in the morning, I'm giving you one, and you better watch out for.
WGN Radio. I'm Riley James. And we're talking to Dorothy, if she's still hung on for us, in Oak Brook, whose husband used to administer cemeteries. And so, fascinating information. You still with us, Dorothy?
Yes.
Okay, good. So, in all the years your husband was on the job, what was the oddest story he came home and told you?
Oh, I don't think there were any...
Really?
...odd stories. Maybe the oddest story was... we had swans at one of the cemeteries on a pond, and he would always ride around the cemetery before he was leaving to make sure, it was okay, everything was all right. And he was riding around to check, and then he noticed that there was some bikes underneath a tree. And so he slowed down, well, he was going slow anyway, but, opened the window, and these kids were up in a tree, and they were yelling, "Mister, mister, please help us. The swan had treed them."
Oh, that's great. Well,
the swan had had a mate, and kids, not necessarily those two, but
yeah,
mean kids had... stoned his mate and the baby swan, so he was not very pleasant, so he had to be removed.
Oh. Well, swans are not necessarily known for their lovely demeanor. They can
no,
be.
No, they're not nice, but losing his wife and children did not help his mood.
I absolutely. I'm with the swan on that one. Jeez. Well, that's something. Were there anything that your husband learned on the job that really surprised him, like what could be done or what couldn't be done that nobody would expect?
No, I don't think so. The thing is, I will tell you that I had had some, my grandmother, my grandfather, and my father died right before I met him.
Uh-huh.
So I had had some, intense relationships with cemeteries. And so at first I was like, maybe taken aback a little, but...
Yeah.
As I met cemeterians and went to meetings, I was really impressed with the fact that the people I met all kind of took it as almost a priest or a minister. It was a calling, and they felt that it was really important to be there for families and to treat them kindly and be as supportive as they could. I was really impressed with all the people I met.
Yeah, I think it is a calling, and it's really in many ways a sacred responsibility. And I think if somebody didn't feel that way, they would wash out of that profession fairly quickly.
Yes, and or they should.
Yeah, right.
Well, they should hire people who can do that and just,
Right. No, I think in general people would self-select out because that, if you're not of the right mindset for that, that can be a really tough job to have. You've got to really be on board with the mission of it. Otherwise, I think it would just be a disaster.
Yeah, I was impressed. There was... one foreman who said that when he was training young men to work out on the grounds, cutting grass or, and they help people find graves, et cetera, he told them that putting the headstone down was the last favor that you could do for someone on earth. That would be the last thing, good thing, that could happen to them. And I was always impressed that he was trying to hand that on to the young men who were coming after him.
Sure, Sure, absolutely. Well, that's a great mission, and I think there's probably a real gold star in heaven for people who are led to do that. And it is a calling, because again, as I say, I think that if you didn't see it that way, that would not be a job you could really do long term.
No, because you really have to, care for people and yes. Want to support them. At the worst time in their life, really.
Yes. You know? Yes. And everybody brings a different story to the table there, as well as very often different spiritual leanings in terms of what they think of the whole process. So it's not one size fits all.
No, no. You have to be able to be open to different people's opinions and ways they're looking at things.
Sure. Well, interesting. I'm sure by proxy you had a fascinating life kind of on the sidelines hearing all about that.
Yeah, it was, it was instructional, and I was impressed by so many people I met that. So it was good.
Good. Good. Well, thanks for the stories, and thanks for waiting, and thanks for calling.
Well, I just want to give you one piece of information, and that was you were talking about photos on monuments. They are doing that again.
Yeah.
So, because you were saying somebody mentioned that a long time ago, or they saw them at Bohemian National. Yeah. So you can have that done again. You know, and people like to do that.
Right, have that etched in the headstone.
Yes.
Yeah, why not? I wish, sometimes just for curiosity's sake, you'll go through an old cemetery, and I often wonder when I look at the names, what was their story? What was their life like? You know, especially if it was a couple hundred years ago. You know, what did they go through? So, of course, maybe that's just the soap opera in me, but I would love to know.
Yes, and sometimes I remember walking through Resurrection Cemetery and coming upon a monument, and it was of a very young boy, 17 or 18,
yeah.
And he had died in the World War.
Oh, man. Yeah, and World War One, of course, everybody thought that was going to be the war to end all wars. Never happened again. And boy, we're talking about such a short time later. So many of the people who were involved in World War One lived to see World War Two, and I'm sure they were horrified.
Yes, and we're horrified today. Seeing the war that's going on.
It's heartbreaking because I just don't see a way to fix the problems. You know, when you have a situation in the Middle East where you've got a group of people who feel that, their land has been encroached upon, this is going to keep going on, and I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah, I was at Yalta. We took a trip, and we went to Yalta, where Stalin and Churchill and, had decided on what would happen after the end of the Second World War.
Right, yeah. Yeah, Truman. Well, yeah, FDR originally. But yes, absolutely.
And, I got such a strange feeling in that room. There was almost a palpable feeling when I was there. What they did caused the problems that are existing today. I have a neighbor who's Palestinian, whose home was taken away. His parents had an apartment house, and of course they were supposed to get paid for it. They never got paid for it, and they got moved out.
Right. No,
absolutely. Of course, I also walked through concentration camp, Auschwitz.
Oh, yeah.
I walked through that, and oh my goodness, so you understand the other side, but there's no answer.
No, well, see, the thing is, of course, the other side, it's an unspeakable tragedy what happened through the Germans' actions. But by solving it by unilaterally deciding we're going to carve out this land, I often think it's like when Columbus ran into the Indians, you know, he didn't discover America. There were people here, so I don't know that ever can resolve. So I worry. I just worry. Because I surely don't have, no matter how I look at this, I can't come up with an answer.
No. I mean, why, if we had empty land that no one was using at the time, and I'm not saying we did, I don't know.
Well, we always laugh that it's Montana, but just give them Montana. But
I mean, instead of moving people out because they're...
Right.
Type of living. They were Bedouins, and so they moved around. They weren't building, buildings. Doesn't mean that wasn't their land and they weren't using it in their way.
And that you wouldn't see what we're seeing now forevermore. This will not go away. Talk about a calling. So, a greater mind than me might settle this, but I don't know what we've set up. It just horrifies me. So.
Yeah, I mean, I never thought that the English and the Irish, that would be settled. But, it is, and wonderful, thank God. But I think this is far worse than that was.
Well, of course it is. Again, because of the way it happened, because of the way it was formed. And so, I don't know. I hope that it works out in a way that I can't imagine, because right now, nothing that I think is good.
No, because both sides are right.
Yes.
In their...
Absolutely. That's the thing. When you start to, as a third party, try to take a side on this, it's not that simple. If we could go back and wind back the clock, this is not the way to do it. But now we're many, many decades later, this is what we got. And I don't know how it works out. I'm worried. So we'll see.
Yes.
All I can say, maybe this is spoken like an old person, but I say, God, I'm glad I'm not young.
Yes, and what my friends and I talk about that, and the only thing we that really saddens us is we're leaving this world to our grandchildren.
Oh, of course. No, of course, to future generations, yes.
And is, heartbreaking. I want to tell you, I'm reluctant to call in, and when Scotty used to call in, I always wanted to call in just to say what a wonderful man he was and how much better I felt after you talked to him on the phone. He was so wonderful, and I regret so much that I didn't do that.
I have a feeling he just heard you now.
Well, I hope so.
Me too. Thank you so much, and call me again. Do not wait, and do not hesitate.
Well, thank you. You are so intelligent and have such a wonderful mind. It's a pleasure to listen to you.
Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
All right. So 888-876-5593 would be 8888. Raleigh, we got Johnny D, we got Chuck, we got James, we got room for you too. More than a half hour to go here on WGN Radio.
Freedom come, freedom go. Tell me yes and let you tell me no. Freedom never stay long.
Is a debutant, pillars of society. Living in a mansion somewhere in the country, and another in Chelsea. Freedom is a rich girl, daddy's little sweet girl, pretty as a sunny day. Freedom never does do what she doesn't want to. Freedom never has to pay.
Freedom come, freedom go. Tell me yes and then you tell me no. Freedom never stay long. Freedom love and then
is a name and freedom is a nature running all around the town. Everybody wants to and everybody tries to, but nobody can hold her down. Freedom is so kind of freedom is so gentle. Freedom is a happy day.
WGN Radio, I'm Robbie James. Those are the Fortunes. Actually, it's Freedom Come, Freedom Go. But if you got it on Capitol in 1971, they say Freedom Comes, Freedom Goes. The Fortunes weren't too pleased about that label copy mix-up, but certainly wasn't the only time it happened. And their biggest hit was You Got Your Troubles. That's why I played that, actually, because You Got Your Troubles peaked at number 7 today in 1965. So much for the Fortunes. 888-876-5593. We will get to Johnny D. We'll get to Chuck. We'll get to James. We'll get to you coming up on WGN Radio. And it's one of my favorite records, The Intervals, Here's That Rainy Day, 1962 on Class, Leon Renee's wonderful label. I thought of it, actually, because I played that Fortunes record, which is forgettable all the way around. But I was thinking, well, they had done a song with Rainy Day in the title. That was a big hit for them. I thought, oh, Here's That Rainy Day. That's my Rainy Day song. And, yeah, the Fortunes did Here Comes That Rainy Day Feeling Again. The Intervals were from St. Louis, and one of the members was Lamont McLemore, yeah, who would go on to the Fifth Dimension. He was a professional photographer, by the way, Playboy, Ebony, Jet, Harper's Bazaar, People, worked as an aerial photographer in the Navy. In fact, Lamont McLemore did Stevie Wonder's first album cover. And he met Marilyn McCoo and Florence LaRue when he was shooting a Miss Black beauty pageant in the mid-60s. And, of course, what came out of that was a Fifth Dimension. He was also a minor league pitcher for a Dodgers farm team when he moved to L.A., and he had actually tried out for the Cardinals when he was in St. Louis. So all the way around, quite talented. But my favorite still, The Intervals, Here's That Rainy Day. 888-876-5593 is 8888. Raleigh, Johnny D. is in Ohio. What's up tonight, Johnny D.?
Hello, Raleigh. Well, I'll tell you what's up. I'm still here, hanging on, you know. But let me say this. Yeah, I told John I want to give you a video update on the video I'm supposed to send you, you know?
Yes.
About Caesar's Memorial?
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes.
Well, I'll get to that in a minute, but let me say this. I actually called earlier. I called after your, I think it was your first caller, a fellow named John. He was talking about cemeteries and cremation. And
yes, John from Waukegan, yes.
John from Waukegan. And he he had mentioned oil. So then I called right after he was, you know, right after he was off. And John answers, and I said to him, I says, yeah, hi, John. I says, wanted to talk to Raleigh about fossil fuels. So then he says to me, he goes, sounds political to me, John.
Yeah, well, we don't want to do that.
Well, then I'm thinking, I was listening to your last conversation with that woman who was so elegant and really informed about a lot of things, you know, about World War One and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict like yourself. And I'm thinking, man, I wasn't allowed to talk about fossil fuels.
No, it's not a question.
And you're talking about the biggest conflict going on right now?
We're not talking about it from the current perspective, if you noticed. We're not talking about it at all from the political issues that are occurring today. We're talking about it from the historical perspective of World War One and World War Two. Now, with that in mind, if you would like to talk about fossil fuels historically, go for it. If you're going to make this an environmental issue today, forget about it.
No, that's not environmental.
I
was talking about what I was going to say. What's the matter?
Go on.
Saying something wrong?
No, go right ahead.
What I was going to say is, the fellow John said it's about the electric vehicles and stuff like that. And, you know, so I says to John, you know, because I said, you figured it out just from me saying fossil fuels that it might be political. And he says, he starts kind of laughing and stuff. There's nothing wrong with his mind, I'll tell you that. But so I said, then they're talking about electric vehicles. I said, but you know, whoever controls oil controls a big part of the world economy. Okay.
And that is currently political. That's why John would stop you.
I didn't say, he said he'd stop me right as soon as I said, I want to talk about fossil fuels.
Yeah, well, apparently he's psychic, because there you go. So drop that subject and get to what you want to talk about next.
All right, well, I just want to say, when you mentioned World War One with the woman there, that real intelligent woman, my grandfather was a machine gunner. In World War One, it says right on his gravestone, with the company outfit he was with and everything.
Wow.
He came over here from Naples when he was like 17.
Uh-huh.
And then he got drafted in the United States Army.
Wow, but wait a minute. Before he was even a citizen?
I guess he became when did World War One start?
About 1918.
Well, he came here in 1912.
Okay, so yeah, he was a citizen. All right.
Yeah, and he was a machine gunner. They wouldn't have let him in the military and put it on his gravestone, that he was with this company in World War One as a machine gunner.
1918, World War One ended. I think it started in 1914, so I think it was 14 through 18. So he would have been here a couple years.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. He comes over here, you know, from Italy,
mm-hmm.
and then he gets drafted into the Army.
In the
United States.
And fortunately, he lived to tell about it, which is good because there were a lot of casualties. But how long did he live?
Well, he lived pretty long. He died in the 60s. He was born 1892, I think it was.
So you knew him?
Oh, yeah, I know my friend. So, yeah, he was one who used to cut the heads off the chickens.
I do. Not only did he participate in World War One, but he lived through World War Two. So he had some fascinating stories.
Well, he could already speak English still when he died. But he was 73 years old when he died, mm-hmm. which is like in the 60s, which was a pretty long life back in those days.
Yeah.
And he got gassed by the Germans or something, you know, that gas they used to use.
Mm-hmm.
But he smoked like a chimney.
Well, I'll bet he was a fascinating guy. And unfortunately, he died while you were too young to really have some of the adult conversations with him.
No, I couldn't. But yeah. I knew him. I remember him
but
distinctly.
I'll bet he had I assume he went over to Europe. Where did he fight? Do you know?
I don't know. All I know is a machine gunner in the United States Army.
Yeah.
In World War
But, you know, there was so much involved, including Italy. And so it would be interesting if he was fighting back on his homeland.
That would have been interesting. I don't know, Raleigh. I don't know much about World War One. All I know is my grandfather was in it. And my father said, Mm-hmm. That he never really talked about it.
It was deadly. I mean, we're talking that there were over 9 million soldiers dead and 23 million wounded, and that's why they called it the Great War and thought that this could never happen again. But not wanting to tread on politics, but when we didn't bite on the League of Nations, you could almost bet there was going to be a World War II to get us into the UN. But the people who fought on the World War I front, which then, like I say, was the Great War, they never thought it was the war to end all wars. They never expected, in their lifetime, let alone just a couple decades later, to see this again.
Yeah, right. That's why Hitler, he didn't like what happened to Germany or something.
Well, as far as that goes, that's what I often talk about the Weimar Republic when we talk about inflation. That's exactly what happened. Germany was so debilitated economically, and the aftermath really led to the kind of inflation that what we're dealing with here is child's play, that the people were ripe for, unfortunately, what happened. And that's much more of a psychological story than it even is a political story.
Well, anyhow, I don't want to take up too much more time, but one thing came to mind when you were talking through the time I was waiting. The fellow that mentioned, now I remember as a kid, we had to be very quiet around the holiday time. Perry Como had a special, didn't he?
Well, Perry Como also had a show, of course.
A show, special, something.
Yeah. Sure.
And he used to sing Ave Maria.
Right, of course. Right? Yes, absolutely.
And we had to be very quiet. There was five of us, you know.
Uh-huh.
My brothers and sisters and me.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad and mother would make us be real quiet when Perry Como was going to sing Ave Maria.
Well, that was probably, the big one for that was the Perry Como holiday special of 1967. And he absolutely sang Ave Maria on that.
This was earlier than 67, Raleigh.
Oh, no, well, he was on for years. You know, he had his own radio show in the 40s. That was the Chesterfield Supper Club. And, of course, later the Perry Como show. But then in the 60s, he had a number of specials. You know, Perry Como Comes to London and Perry Como in Hollywood and Christmas at the Hollywood Palace and all that. But one of the real, real big ones was that 67. But, yeah, he did a ton of specials.
Yeah. Well, maybe you could play Ave Maria one night.
No, this will never happen, but thank you anyway.
Well, why not?
I'm not about to do that.
All right.
And you can hear it all you want, as you know. It's all over YouTube, and you can probably see him sing it while you're at it. All right.
All right. Now, on the video, I had done one earlier today, but I wasn't happy with it. So I'm going to redo it tomorrow, and then maybe I'll try to get it out to you by tomorrow night. Mm-hmm. So, okay, that's all.
All right, good deal. Thanks. Appreciate the call.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, and I think his announcer was Frank Gallup. All right, Perry Como's 888-876-5593 would be 8888-Raleigh. We'll get to Chuck, we'll get to Sherry, hopefully to James, too. And remember, we've got a full 3 hours tomorrow night if we miss anybody. And I'm expecting to take attendance and have your presence as well on WGN Radio. We'll be right back. Cross. Taste of Honey, 1978 on Capitol, and that song was certified platinum this week in 1978. It was interesting because the big hit, Boogie Oogie Oogie, was inspired by an unresponsive audience that the group was performing live for at an American military base. And Hazel Payne, one of the members, yelled at the hostile crowd, "If you think you're too cool to boogie, we got news for you. Everyone here tonight is going boogie, and you're no exception to the rule." And at that point, Janis Johnson wrote what Payne shouted down, saying, "That's the opening lyrics to a song." And Perry Kibble, who was also in the group, who's no longer with us, sadly, came up with the funky bass line to accompany it, and it was pure gold. So 888-876-5593-8888, Raleigh. And Sherry is in Naperville. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Hi, Holly. How are you?
I'm here.
Okay, I'm going to take off speaker.
Yes, that's the idea. All right, so what is on your mind, okay, Sherry?
Well, a caller earlier talked about Battlehymn of the Republic.
About what?
Battle Hymn of the Republic.
Oh, all right. Well, we're not going to be playing it.
No, I understand that.
What about it?
But I wanted to tell everybody that I had a special friend 20 years ago, John Howitt, and his great-great-great-great-great aunt was Juliet Ward Howe.
And she wrote that.
And she wrote that.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah, she wrote the lyrics, not the music, but the lyrics. She wrote the lyrics.
Right, exactly. The other connection to his family was General Ambrose Burnside. And he had, like, mutton chops.
Okay.
That's where the term sideburns came from.
Yes, he absolutely did, by the way. I remember pictures of him. It was just, I don't know what the man was thinking. But
well, it was just he has a Scottish background, and I'm sure something else.
Yes.
But I know you don't like politics, but when cell phones came out, like AT&T, and then it was...
No, wait. Ambrose Burnside died in 1881. I don't think he had a landline, let alone a cell phone.
No. But my friend...
I see.
All right. Who is relative...
Just checking. All right.
...are in the past, these milestone relatives... My actual friend during the 90s would have to get all these shots to go across the country, and he worked for AT&T, turned into Lucent before it was bought out by Alcatel.
We've run out of time. You've ended the show. Call earlier next time.
I apologize.
Talk to you soon. All right.
Cannot always.
All right. Good deal. Do the best you can. All right. So, yeah, I was thinking, man, if Burnside had a cell phone, this I want to hear. Now, Civil War time, yes. Cell phones, no. All right. So that's what we have tomorrow night. Hopefully Chuck in Rockford will call back, and likewise with James on the South Side. And thanks for his many stories. We thank Adam for keeping us on the air. We thank John for screening your calls. Above all, I thank you for calling. Please do it again. A full show tomorrow night starting at 10 o'clock Central. Until then, that's a wrap. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.